With the new year coming, you may be thinking about a resolution, more exercise, maybe doing a little yoga. Our commentator, Sandeep Roy, will not be joining you.
True confession, I am an Indian who doesn't do yoga. I wouldn't know a downward dog if it bit me. But because I'm Indian, people don't even ask if I know yoga. They ask, what kind of yoga did you grow up with? Iyengar, Ashtanga, Bikram? Actually, most Indians I know don't do yoga either. My friend Rajasvini Bhansali is an exception, and she's often the only Indian in class.
The instructor pointed to me in the middle of the class and talked about how Indians are better oriented towards doing squats. And I realized he was holding me up as an example of how us primitive people are just better squatters and therefore have looser hips.
I always thought I wasn't thick-skinned enough to survive yoga class. Then I heard the Hindu American Foundation had launched a campaign to take back yoga and reclaim its Hindu roots. I was alarmed. What if they really took it back and I wasn't ready? I decided to fix my yoga deficit disorder. So I show up at my first yoga class in San Francisco. It's steamy hot. There are over 100 people. And sure enough, my friends and I are the only 4 Indians. The instructor is from Tennessee, blonde, shirtless, and a bit of a yoga rock star. There are disco balls on the ceiling and huge posters of Krishna on the wall. I am just amazed at all the stuff. Yoga tops, bottoms, blankets, mats. My vision of a yogi was a guy in the forest sitting on a piece of tree bark, or in the deluxe version, a deer skin. He didn't have a yoga mat carrier. I survived the yoga class without embarrassing 5,000 years of Indian culture. It doesn't feel very Indian. My friend Naveen Chandra calls it bionic disco yoga. But he thinks yoga's Hindu roots are still there.
The vast majority of yoga teachers have studied Hinduism more than I have, or my parents have. And I'm learning more about the meanings of the shlokas and the intention of Hinduism than I ever knew as a kid growing up being taught Hinduism from my community.
Even back in India, yoga has not been such a big deal. Kate Churchill, director of the documentary Enlighten Up, interviewed yoga pioneer Pattabhi Joyce at his school in South India.
And we might as well have been at the Puck Building in New York or something. I mean, there was over 100 Westerners, and there wasn't a single Indian, Sandeep. I mean, we were looking around and saying, like, well, where are the Indians?
But things are starting to change. The Indian government is filming hundreds of yoga poses so no one tries to patent them. People are practicing yoga at call centers and other workplaces.
We saw in large cities like Mumbai, for example, that there are power yoga studios cropping up because Madonna does yoga. It has nothing to do with India. Whereas if you go to a power yoga studio here in the U.S., you know, they'll say what you're doing is a 5,000-year-old ancient practice.
I hear they come to your homes now in India to teach you yoga. Private lessons. And it's the real thing. They learned it from American DVDs.
Back to neutral, double pigeon. Keep your left shin over.
Commentator Sandeep Roy is host of New America Now on KALW in San Francisco. You can comment on his essay at the opinion page at npr.org. Good morning, I'm Linda Wertheimer. Prince William and Kate Middleton hope to live a regular life when they're married, and they plan to do it without hired help. The couple will have 24-hour security, but say they'll do their own cooking and cleaning. William's father, Prince Charles, famously employs nearly 150 people to handle his daily life. The couple say staff would ruin the intimacy of their marriage. So Kate cooks and William washes up. For now, it's Morning Edition.
And now we turn to the YouTube Top 10. That is the 10 most often viewed videos of the last year from the website featuring millions of them. YouTube is the address where every so often a video goes viral. It captures viewers by the hundreds and the hundreds of thousands, then maybe the millions. Maybe it hits a news cycle for a few days too before fading away to allow another video to take its place in the email inboxes of so many of us. YouTube recently announced its 10 most viewed videos of the year. To talk about some of them, we've called on, once again, pop culture columnist Jeff Yang. He writes for the San Francisco Chronicle. Thanks so much for joining us.
Always great to be here.
We should point out that there are no professionally produced music videos included on this list, but I want to start with, I don't know if this is one of your favorites. I will simply say, without sharing too many details, that this was very popular around here, The Old Spice Man, first seen in last year's Super Bowl. It was eventually became a huge social media campaign. I will just walk down memory lane and play a short clip for the ladies.
Hello, ladies. Look at your man. Now back to me. Now back at your man. Now back to me. Sadly, he isn't me. But if he stopped using lady-scented body wash and switched to Old Spice, he could smell like he's me. Look down. Back up. Where are you? You're on a boat with the man your man could smell like.
This video got 26 million hits. I won't tell you how many of those were mine. Why do you think it was so successful?
I think that this commercial was exceptional in so many ways. One was that it was not afraid to subvert expectations. It was something that really kind of came out literally in people's faces. It took a person who happened to be African American and put that into the spotlight of, you know, this is what you'd like your man to be. And I think that there's, you know, sort of an edge of controversy around that, perhaps. I mean, there's, you know, an entire history of questionable stereotypical representations of African-American men in relationship to sex and sexuality. But this somehow was fun-loving. It was able to both laugh at itself and also, I think, lift up this notion of people of color, men of color, being beautiful. And there was a sense in which I did feel just a little bit like I wish I smelled like him.
Well, you know, one of the funny things is sometimes an ad can be really successful as an ad, but it doesn't actually move people to buy the product. And one of the interesting things about this one is that it actually does seem to have done something for the Old Spice brand, which is what ultimately this is what this is. It's selling Old Spice. Interesting, though, another video in the top 10, the next one I wanted to talk about, was not created by a professional ad agency. It's just some home video taken by somebody named Paul Vasquez. He's an outdoor enthusiast. He sees two rainbows and he gets really excited. Let's hear it.
Whoa, that's a full rainbow all the way. Double rainbow. Oh my god. It's a double rainbow all the way. Whoa! Oh my god! Oh my god!
Now the comments are hilarious. My favorite was one says, I'm turning the volume down so my parents don't think I'm watching porn in my room. But what do you think? It's like you can't stop looking at this. Why is that?
Wow. Well, you know, this is one of the things I have been thinking a lot about regarding YouTube, because, you know, when you think of what YouTube means, even in its brand, it's called YouTube. It's about personalizing the idea of television, about putting these tools of broadcasting in the hands of the masses. And in this clip, I mean, I think what you have is something not in some ways dissimilar from the reason why the Old Spice commercials kind of caught fire. We've been in a very grim reality. Our environment is full of things which are, you know, not very uplifting. And whether you're talking about something that kind of breaks the mold with absurdity and ironic humor, or something like this, where he really does sound like he's having a near sexual or religious experience, maybe both.
I don't know. I don't want to speculate about what's going on there. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. We're talking about the 10 most watched YouTube videos this year with pop culture columnist Jeff Yang. He writes Asian pop for the San Francisco Chronicle. We're not talking about all 10. Obviously, we don't have time. I do want to move to the number one most watched YouTube video this year. We've talked about this on the program. This is a young man named Antoine Dodson. He's a young man in Alabama. He was interviewed on a local news program because somebody, it's a terrible story, actually climbed through the window of his apartment that he shares with his sister and her child and tried to attack her. And he fought the man off. And maybe you could explain it. It became a song. Explain that. Can you... Well, you could explain it better than I can.
The funny thing is, I actually think this is one of the things that binds together a lot of what we're talking about thematically here. So this enterprising set of brothers, actually they're, you know, Brooklyn-based musicians, have created this phenomenon called Auto-Tune the News, right? The Gregory Brothers. And what they've done is they've taken auto-tune software, you know, as popularized by Lil Wayne and others, and used it to take ordinary footage, you know, people speaking about random things, and turned it into music. And what they did was they took Antoine Dodson's almost accidentally hilarious riff and set it to music in a way that was incredibly catchy.
He's climbing in your windows, he's snatching your people up, trying to rape them, so you need to hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your husband, because they're raping everybody out here.
They did the same thing with Double Rainbow as well.
Double Rainbow on the way across the sky.
Okay, so that's festive.
You know, this is what I would put it down to. I think that the promise of YouTube is that it can make anybody a star. What Auto-Tune does is it takes that promise and turns it into a reality. We can all, you know, be essentially pop stars, pop idols. And it's, you know, American Idol, it's Glee, you know, and it's in a time when we all want that kind of feeling of uplift. And somehow or other, those two things connected together. And, you know, it's become a phenomenon that's run away with itself. You know, Bed Intruder was a number one ranked download on iTunes. Antoine Dodson is now himself kind of a celebrity. They even had a holiday clip, I believe.
Wait, hold on a second. Well, I do want to say that there was a bit of a controversy around that Antoine Dodson story, because there were those who felt, just apart from just the terribleness of the original circumstances, there were those who wondered whether he was being exploited or made fun of. We actually had the opportunity to speak with him about this earlier this year, and I will just play a short clip of what he had to say about this.
This could be an opportunity for our family to get out of the hood, you know what I'm saying? So I took it and I was running with it, and I'm still running with it.
That, to me, is part of the most fascinating thing about this whole thing. He actually did achieve some benefit from it. They did actually make enough money from the song, the Bed Intruder song, to move. How did that happen?
The way that YouTube works is, of course, it spreads something that's free, right? I mean, these clips, by definition, are something that people, you know, open up their inboxes and see. And they don't think of something as them as something to pay for. But by turning that thing, that sort of found art, into real art of a sort, into a musical number, into something that actually can be purchased and downloaded, it commoditizes it in a way that potentially, I'm not saying it's the answer to everything, but I think it is really kind of quite interesting that of the 10 most watched viral videos of 2010, three of them are people of color. And, you know, of those, two of them are people of color who could not have imagined that they would have the kind of celebrity / notoriety before these things occurred. And it was accidental, but they managed to turn those things into something in some ways positive and powerful and empowering for themselves and certainly profitable.
Jeff Yang covers pop culture. He's a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. His column is called Asian Pop, and he joined us from New York. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.
To see the videos that we've been talking about, you can visit our website. Go to npr.org, go to the Programs tab, and click on Tell Me More.
You don't have to say your list, because he's watching you, he's watching you. So you can run and tell that, run and tell that, run and tell that, run and tell that.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.
People believe a man with a sack will come in their house at night and leave behind gifts. I was attacked by some fat guy with a fur collar.
If I see a fat red guy running around, he better have some Kool-Aid for me.
You've got until January 6th, 1 week, to nominate your favorite word or phrase of 2010. That's the deadline the American Dialect Society has set for its Word of the Year, which will be announced the very next day. You'll be in good company. Scholars of the English language are also nominating their favorites. And here to tell us his favorites is linguist Ben Zimmer. He writes the on-language column for the New York Times Magazine. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, among the words and phrases that have entered the lexicon big time this year, what is the word at the very top of your list?
Well, the very top of my list has a word that is rather trashy, actually, and that word is junk. We heard a lot about junk this year in various contexts. We heard about how Greece's credit rating was lowered to junk status, and that set all the stock markets tumbling. We heard about the junk shot, which was something that BP tried to do in order to fix that oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. But perhaps most famously, we heard a young man at the airport in San Diego in November tell a screener from the TSA, the security there, if you touch my junk, I'll have you arrested. And this became kind of a rallying cry for people who were upset about the new security protocols that the TSA had enforced.
What other words caught your attention?
Well, the whole WikiLeaks scandal generated a lot of new words and phrases, I think. Something that's a bit newer that people were talking about after the fallout of WikiLeaks was hacktivism, which describes the kind of activism that's performed by computer hackers. And we saw that happening when there were hackers that were rallying to the defense of WikiLeaks and trying to shut down websites that they perceived to be the enemies of WikiLeaks. So they were performing hacktivism.
Every year there are words that come out of the political world. And there was one word that is actually quite an old word that got some currency this year, and that was shellacking.
Yes, this is a colorful slang term used by President Obama to describe the thorough defeat that the Democrats experienced. You know, shellac, of course, is this kind of resin that's used for a varnish for floors and so forth. But in the 1920s, it started being used as a verb in a slangy way, originally by the flappers of the 1920s, who would use it to say how they got drunk in a particularly inebriated way. If you were shellacked, it was like you were plastered. And then eventually it started being used in sports as well, particularly boxing, for instance. If a boxer was really beat up very badly, you could say that he was shellacked. And, you know, then we saw the transfer of that into things like politics, where you could talk about it as being a bad defeat at the polls.
So what makes a word or phrase catch on?
Very often it can rely on past words as a kind of a mashup. We often see this happening in pop culture, for instance, where fans of Justin Bieber call themselves Beliebers, which combines Bieber and Believer, or the fans of the TV show Glee call themselves Gleeks, which combines Glee and Geek. So very often you can find the building blocks of new words and phrases just by combining things that we already have at hand. And then it also really needs to strike a chord. It needs to resonate with a particular subculture, and we find these things catching on very quickly these days through the use of social networking. Social media like Twitter and Facebook allows these things to spread very quickly these days.
Ben Zimmer's website is called Visual Thesaurus, and he's also on the Executive Council of the American Dialect Society. Thanks very much, and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
And if you've got a nomination of your own for Word of the Year, remember there is still time. Send an email to WOTY@AmericanDialect.org.